I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show
on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Welcome to Tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam Panic.
To be able to bring people together.
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Kind of awkward to even talk about it. I can't even mention teams anymore.
Ask me what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
Trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Everybody, we don't think I've tampered with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to a non-Sam Amick edition of the Tampering Podcast. He has been suspended for tampering. And, you know, the Knicks and Sixers are under investigation. Andrew Schlecht is moving one seat up. And Fred Katz is here. Do you guys want to just start with this tampering issues going across the league? I feel like we probably should, right?
You're going to have to be more specific.
Yeah.
We've got, should we just talk about the...
Here.
Yeah, should we just talk about the Knicksers and combine them into one?
Well, it's all East Coast. That's where all the slimy business dealings happen anyway. So, Fred Katz, you're out there. You can just kind of take us through it.
All right, well, let's start with the Knicks because full disclosure, I haven't even had a chance to confirm this yet, but I'm sure Chris Haynes is correct in his reporting because he's both a good reporter and this was just, you know, this was inevitable. But Chris Haynes, as we were about to start at 11 a.m. on Monday, Chris Haynes just reported that the NBA has begun an investigation into the New York Knicks for alleged tampering regarding free agent pickup Jalen Brunson. And then he said that the NBA is going to look into whether the Knicks made contact with Brunson prior to the start of the free agency period. And, there's obviously a very realistic chance that they are going to find some evidence there. You know, this was inevitable. I wrote a week and a half ago that there was an excellent chance that the league was going to conduct a tampering investigation into the Knicks' recruitment of Brunson. And, you know, we'll see what they find. But that signing came out way before 6 o'clock, and there are a lot of people in the league who were kind of frustrated about that process, even on the Mavs' behalf, like people Mavs unrelated. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, it was the only one that was reported right after the 6 o'clock deadline, right?
Right after. Is right after 2 days before? Because Haynes reported on June 28th,
two days before
the start of free agency, yeah, that the Knicks were signing Brunson to a four-year, $110 million deal. Mm-hmm. And it turned out to be 4 years, $104 million. But look, the Mavs knew he was going to the Knicks,
right,
like way before June 30th. And so, I mean, yeah, I mean, it's going to take more than just that kind of stuff. You know, what's going to be really interesting about this is the Knicks hired Jalen Brunson's dad about a month before they signed him. Mm-hmm. And there are reports about them looking into signing hiring him as an assistant coach. I mean, Stephen Bondi from the New York Daily News reported in, like, I think it was April. It was in the spring that, you know, Rick Brunson is a guy to watch. The Knicks wanted Jalen Brunson, and Rick Brunson was a longtime Tibbs assistant in Chicago and in Minnesota. And so Rick Brunson is a guy to watch. And you know, on top of that, Leon Rose is Knicks president. And he used to be Jalen Brunson's agent, or he used to run the basketball division of CAA, which is Jalen Brunson's agency. And Jalen Brunson's kind of secondary is Sam Rose, who is Liam Rose's son. So there are these family connections. And it's going to be really interesting to see how the NBA attempts to, or if the NBA even does attempt to police that. Because, you know, a dad talking to a son is...
That's not illegal, and it shouldn't be illegal, right? I mean, like, you know, the Miami Heat could hire LeVar Ball tomorrow. I mean, that, like, what there shouldn't be a rule and isn't a rule that prevents against that.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm saying that like, you know, as some long term, you know, to try to get LaMelo. But I mean, to me, the only thing in question is the contact pre-free agency. And as Andrew alluded to, I think we all know this wasn't the only situation where this happened. To me, it just seems like another one of the obvious slap on the wrist, second round pick. You know, yeah. Isn't that what they did to Miami for Lowry?
I will say, I don't know if that's definitely the case.
Do you think this is more? Remember, Miami and the Raptors had like a sign and trade, like a super detailed sign and trade already worked out for Kyle Lowry that was like, oh, y'all just like worked that out in 2 minutes.
Right.
Yeah,
no, totally. I mean, look, part of it is going to depend on it's not just the family stuff, and it's also what the contact was and when it was. So, for example, the Knicks caused a stir when William Wesley, Worldwide West, their number two in their front office, executive VP of the Knicks, him, Allen Houston, who's working in the Knicks front office, and Julius Randle, like all those guys went to a Mavs Jazz. They went to game one of the Mavs Jazz first round series, yeah. And they sat right there courtside. And everyone at the time was like, oh man, they're doing an intimidation tactic of Donovan Mitchell. They're there for Donovan Mitchell. You know, they were kind of killing two birds with one stone with that one, right? Because that was also a Dallas game. And I know there were, like, I've spoken to people around the league who were, like, pissed on their behalf. The league is going to look into that and look to see if there was contact made then. I think they're going to look to see if they were, you know, if there were other avenues where there was contact made as well. And, like, I don't know. I wrote this about a week and a half ago. Where, and I know this for sure, this is not me just guessing on stuff. Like, I know this for sure. Everyone assumes that the NBA's go-to penalty for this is now just loss of a second-round pick. Because mm-hmm. That's what happened in the Lonzo Ball sign-in trade. And that's what happened in the Kyle Lowry sign-in trade. And they just go second-round pick. And I know for sure that is not their blanket policy. That's just what they decided in those moments. And if they find evidence of tampering that they believe to be particularly egregious, they are down to go with a harsher penalty. But they have to find the evidence. It can't just be like, this is what we believed happened. It has to be like evidence you can present in a courtroom and actually prove your point.
So what would that look like? Would that be like 2 second rounders? What?
I think it could be a first.
Yeah.
So Andrew,
but that's I wasn't explicitly told it could be a first. Mm-hmm. But
we're making the case now why the Knicks should just give up all their picks to the Jazz, because then when the NBA comes calling for a pick, they could be like, we don't got any. It's like somebody trying to pickpocket you on the street. Ain't nothing in my pocket.
Legitimately, that's what happened with the Timberwolves and Joe Smith, is that they had already given away 2 first rounders, and then when they took away 5. They didn't really take away 5. They ended up like actually giving one back to them. They only lost 2, but like the penalty, like the day of, was like, they're going to lose 5 consecutive first round picks. We're like, well, we already traded 2 of them. We're like, well, then you're going to lose 3. You know, it was,
then give us Rudy Gobert.
Right. Exactly.
That's, we can get, and I want to get to the Donovan Mitchell, you know, pursuit from the Knicks, but how about the Philly one? I mean, would the NBA potentially come down more harsh on something like that, where it just seems like there's like salary manipulation? And obviously, I mean, Andrew, I don't know if you want to just detail kind of everything going on with that one, but that one's like, you might view harsher because it's like kind of like cap circumvention in some sense.
Yeah, that's where like the more harsh penalty would come from. Like, it's not the tampering, I don't think, with the Sixers. I think that if they found something, they would probably do the second rounder for them. And they don't really care. They don't even have room on their roster for a second round pick right now. But if it is cap circumvention, like the track record for that is with the Joe Smith contract, where they gave him, essentially, they, in writing, said that they were going to give him like 2 years of a low salary, and then they were going to, once they had bird rights, they were going to bump up his salary and give him a huge deal. Well, you can't do that. Like, that's not within the rules of the NBA. And so they voided his contract, 5 consecutive first-round picks taken away, and I just detailed that, like, it really was, ended up just being 2, because they gave 1 back to them, and then they already had 2 traded away. But that's a pretty harsh penalty. Even if the penalty was, like, we're taking away two first rounders and you don't get Joe, which, like, Joe's a very replaceable player. It's not like he was some awesome player. He was a good player. But that's a pretty harsh penalty. And if the penalty was, like, PJ Tucker's contract is voided and we're taking away two first rounders, like, that's a harsh penalty. Also, the situation was so bad because it was all in writing. Like, the whole thing was in writing. And that's how they were able to come down so hard on them. You would think that Daryl Morey would not have this in writing, that this would be like a handshake deal or whatever.
Well, I would say this. I mean, I think there's absolutely zero chance, like, Daryl Morey, like, you know, grafted out a you know, faxable contract. But remember, I mean, like, they could take phones now, right? Remember that was like a big thing a couple years ago? Like, does writing include a text message that hints at it?
This has got to be a phone call only conversation, right? You can't text this stuff. You got to be smart enough.
I don't know. Kids today.
Hey,
kids today.
This is a 37-year-old we're talking about, though.
Yeah, PJ Tucker is so not a kid today. Yeah. I don't know, man. Daryl Morey's putting tweets in writing.
So what? Yeah, I was gonna say. That's so true. So maybe check PJ Tucker's AOL .com account.
Yeah. Shoefan at hotmail.com.
Right, yeah. He blogged about it on his Zanga about the cap circumvention that's going to happen.
Yeah, you can. They shared his contract on Kazaa, actually.
Wow.
Yeah. But you would think that, I mean, if I'm a Sixers fan, I think the most likely outcome is that they do the investigation. They're not able to find anything substantial. Maybe they find some tampering charges. They find him a second-round pick, and we just move on. Like, I think that's the most likely outcome.
The interesting part of the Sixers stuff, and Andrew, you got on this, but, like, tampering is one thing. I think cap circumvention is worse.
Yeah.
So if and something that we do need to address is, like, James Harden, what was it, forgetting to file his paperwork in time for his option deadline, right? Like, that was like a whole thing. And that brings that into question too, right? Like, that might be a way. And that was right after the Nets traded him to Philly, right? And there were suspicions at that time, and Zach Lowe had been all over this, and he said this at the time. Mm-hmm. Like, there were suspicions at the time that there was a wink and a nudge, like, why don't you not file that paperwork, you know? And we'll figure it out in the offseason. And, you know, Zach had talked about at the time of, like, and there were people around the league who were just like, I wonder what's going to happen here. Is he going to take way less money so they can use the full MLE? And if the league can find a way to tie all of these actions together, then now we're not really talking about, I mean, we are talking about tampering, I guess, but we're not really just talking about tampering. We're talking about cap circumvention and the penalties for that. Historically, like you said, with Joe Smith, like, that the Timberwolves didn't make the playoffs for a decade and a half.
Yeah.
I mean, that ruined like a generation of Timberwolves teams.
And McHale was suspended too for a year, right?
I forget the details.
I think that he was. I think that even that would be like you're telling Daryl Morey to go sit out a year and you're losing all these first rounders. I mean, it really did ruin the Kevin Garnett era. Like, a lot of people forget, like, oh, they were just, you know, horrible management. Not only horrible management, like, so bad that they took away assets that could have made them a much better team.
I mean, they definitely would have nailed those first-round picks and been dominant in the West. Had
they would have taken whoever the equivalent of Johnny Flynn would have been on the team. Yeah.
Oh, man. Yes. They could have taken Yaroslav Korolev before the Clippers did.
There are just wild stories in, like, management history in sports. I'm sure Fred Katz has been locked into the Derek Jeter documentary. But the whole, like, Steinbrenner, like, hiring a private investigator for Dave Winfield and get suspended 3 years. I was like, geez, that happened? That's why I was just like, man, imagine if that happened today. Like, that exact
thing. Unbelievable.
It's an insane one.
Steinbrenner
was suspended from baseball for a combined 4 years. And we're all just like, yeah, George Steinbrenner, what a winner. Nah. No.
Well, the funny part was, like, the idea that you know, him being suspended was just like created the Yankees dynasty, because they're like, you know, all these young great players like Posada, Rivera, Jeter, like he would have just traded him away.
Yeah.
Jeez. All right. Well, let's stick in the New York market. This is a very New York East Coast theme podcast. Update us on Donovan Mitchell and the Knicks, Fred.
Yeah. So honestly, we seem like we're kind of in the same place that we've been for a few weeks now. And Shams just said a couple of days ago that like the Knicks and Jazz haven't really corresponded since seeing, you know, our colleague Tony Jones initially put out that report about the Knicks and Jazz talking about a Mitchell trade. I just don't think there's that much urgency right now on either side. I think one of the really interesting parts of specifically the Knicks and Mitchell, and everyone just kind of has the Knicks locked in as favorites, myself included, because everybody knows that Donovan Mitchell is not ending that contract with Utah. But what's really interesting about, I think, them specifically is that I think both sides, the Jazz and the Knicks, can credibly convince themselves that they're the ones with the leverage. And that's exactly the type of negotiation that ends up going far. You know, the Jazz can do it because Danny Ainge can say, well, I want a boatload of stuff for Donovan Mitchell, and I'm not going to settle for a boatload minus one, because that's how Danny Ainge negotiates. You can also say, well, we've got Mitchell under contract for three more years, so why should I feel a rush to trade him at this exact moment when I could just wait out and wait till I get the best offer and then make the trade then? I think the Knicks are saying, well, we've got all of these draft picks. We've got a number of good young players. Nobody can really, who's a potential Mitchell suitor, whether it's Washington, whether it's Miami, like nobody can really make a better offer than we can right now. So like our B offer is better than their A offers. So we'll just make that. He wants to come here anyway, which is what everybody presumes. So we think we have the leverage. And I think both sides, if they're thinking that way, I think both sides would kind of have a point. And it makes for a really interesting negotiation. And it makes it so it's a situation that just kind of strings out.
What is it more likely that Donovan Mitchell is at training camp or a Mets playoff game come October?
I think the answer is both. I think he'll be at a Mets playoff game.
Jazz might just let him. Well, you mentioned the word urgency, which I think is interesting in this situation where, you know, if you're the Jazz, you could think, hey, let the Knicks go into the season, let them disappoint themselves through 15 games and be, you know, whatever, 6-11 through 17 games, something like that. And then they'll be like, got to act now. Because, I mean, you know the market, you know the situation. The fan base will probably be calling for it. They'll probably be calling for it at training camp day two, right? Like, why is he not here yet? So that would be, you would think the Jazz could create leverage if they take it into the season. But there's the flip side of that of like, Utah really wants to like get this rebuild going, right? I mean, part of the appeal of the Gobert trade wasn't just all the picks, but it was like, if they can stink next year, they might get the number one pick, the number two pick in this loaded, you know, Wembanyama, Scoot Henderson draft. If Donovan Mitchell's in there, like, you know, winning a few games in the first month of the season, that might screw their pick long term. And I think they know that. So the urgency level stuff is interesting from both sides.
Yeah, you win, totally. You win five or six games at the start of the season that we're not planning to win. Like that can mess everything up at the end of the season. And to me, it's not specifically about the odds, because the odds suck no matter where you're at in the lottery. If you have the worst record in the league, your odds are still 14%. Like it's not good odds. But it's all about how far you can fall. Because if you're at the first spot, the furthest you can fall is fifth. So if you have the worst record in the league, you're guaranteed a top five pick. If you're third, fourth, or fifth, boy, you can fall pretty far. And like that's what you want to mitigate if you're tanking. A lot of people are like, well, it doesn't matter. All the odds are, you know, they are what they are. They're terrible. No, it's really not that. It's you don't want to be the team that has the fourth, you know, best odds, and you fall down to like six or seven, because then like you're kind of screwed then. So you really want, if you're going to tank, like you need to do it right.
Andrew, I'm smiling right now because, you know, when you watch like a demon movie and the demon overcomes a person's body and you see them become the demon. I feel like that just happened to you, but with Sam Preston.
That is probably true.
I've... I felt like I was listening to a Sam Presti press conference right now. No, that's very true. What you don't want is for Donovan Mitchell to go out in an early season game and they're playing Denver, and Denver is resting Jamal Murray and Michael Porter Jr., and Mitchell goes for 48 and you win that game on the road that you were never supposed to win. And now all of a sudden you go into the lottery with fourth best odds because you miss it by two wins or something like that. And Donovan Mitchell's really good, so he might win you a game you're not supposed to win.
Yeah.
There are interesting just like personal dynamics here. Like I don't really know if it's going to be awkward for Donovan Mitchell to go in, not awkward. Like the big difference between a Donovan Mitchell possible trade and most other all-star level trades that we've seen in recent years, he's making absolutely no noise to get traded. You know, this is not like Anthony Davis where they sent him home for months because things were so uncomfortable after a very public trade request. Donovan Mitchell is not asked for a trade.
No, he's just going to like single A baseball games in New York and just like, I love this city.
Dude, he went to a Brooklyn Cyclones game and threw out the first pitch at a Brooklyn Cyclones game, and he took BP before the game with the Brooklyn Cyclones. He's like an amazing baseball player. He was mashing home runs with a wood bat. He's like awesomely good.
That's interesting.
So good on Donovan Mitchell. But it's just there are a lot of weird personal dynamics here. Like, I don't think anybody on the outside, I don't think anybody who isn't intimately close with Donovan Mitchell can say whether things will be uncomfortable or totally fine if he goes into Jazz training camp. And there's the other side of this too, which is, remember what happened with the Lakers when everybody knew they were going to trade for Anthony Davis? And like Lonzo knew he was going to be out, and Ingram knew he was going to be out. And it was like an uncomfortable locker. They won 35 games that year. It was like an uncomfortable locker room just waiting for the inevitability of those guys getting traded, right? And there were different personal dynamics there because there was the narrative of like LeBron is trying to get them traded. So that was obviously very uncomfortable. But
that's
like
a Knicks thing, though. That would almost be what the Knicks would have to deal with.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like if you're the Knicks and you go in and like you're Emmanuel Quickley, you're Obi Toppin, and this trade just seems like an inevitability. And maybe it's not. I mean, maybe he ends up going elsewhere. The Knicks don't give up what the Jazz want, which is a ridiculously high price. Like if you're Emmanuel Quickley, you're Obi Toppin, you're Quentin Grimes, who I think would, from Utah's perspective, would have to be in there. I think he's the main player that they would want because he has a chance to be really good. You know, that could be an uncomfortable experience for you too. Like, and I don't know either way, cause you just never know with young guys, and you never know with someone like Mitchell, cause you can't read people's minds, but that presents the potential for there to be just weird, possibly uncomfortable dynamics on either side.
And that is where I think Utah probably won't have to deal with that as much. I mean, like Walker Kessler is not going to be in the locker room like, let us know, Donovan, are you here or are you not? That's just probably, I mean, sadly, I think going to be a really dull situation, right? I mean, year one of a massive overhaul of a rebuild. Like, I'm sure the fan base, you know, attendance numbers are going to go down. The interest locally is probably going to go down somewhat. I mean, there'll probably be some uncomfortable coverage and angst in the arena if Donovan is just kind of lingering there and everybody knows it's gone, but I don't think that'll compare at all to what New York's going through. And you know, Danny Ainge has a stomach for it. We know that. Does, you know, the Knicks entire leadership group have that type of stomach for it?
Yeah.
I mean, an interesting Knicks thing is that, like, so Leon Rose is their team president. But Leon's not like on like all of the day-to-day trade calls. The guy who does that is a guy named Brock Aller, who is basically their cap guy. And he tends to do not every trade call. There are people who've played. I've heard Frank Zanin, their assistant GM, of conducting some, and I've heard of Scott Perry, their general manager, doing some, and so on and so forth. And Leon tends to like splice in at the end to you know, confirm calls and just like finish things up and wrap it up. But for the most part, I think Brock Aller is doing at least the plurality of their trade calls. And with Brock, he is totally and completely obsessive about marginal value stuff. Like, absurdly, to the point that I've heard from teams that they're just like, he would not let it go about this draft rights guy. So we were like, whatever, man, just take him so we can be done here. Like there's he's really earned that reputation. So one of the most interesting, like I keep mentioning personal dynamics, and obviously when you're trading for an all-star player, there's basketball stuff, but I'm fascinated by the personal stuff. And like that personality going up against Danny Ainge, where he's like, I have the stomach for whatever, and I'm just going to go home and chill, and you can call me when you meet my price. And Brock being like the exact opposite of like, not only that will I not meet my price, but we got to talk about all the tweaking on the margins as well. Like that is a very interesting personality dynamic when it comes to talking out this trade.
Yeah, I would also say like the Jazz have a little bit more work to do to get to the bottom, because they've got guys that are going to just pull them to the middle. Mike Conley, Bogdanovich, Malik Beasley, Jordan Clarkson, Pat Bev is on this team. Like Jared Vanderbilt's like a very helpful player. Right now, they've got a little bit of work to do if they do want to be at the bottom of the barrel, because they have like a top eight that's like, okay, I know all those names. If you want to be at the bottom of the barrel, you got to be at a level where like, I don't know who these guys are. We got to be like who he play for all stars if you want to like really tank this year. Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Although, you know, the West, there ain't that. It's really them, the Thunder, and Houston. And the weird thing is Houston and the Thunder are now a few years into it where it's like they kind of want to compete, right? There's going to be less shutting down of players. There's going to be like some of the youth will just be, you know, better winning type players. So if you look at the West, like who is going to be worse than the Jazz?
It's a good question. I think the Thunder,
Houston is going to be worse.
Houston's going to be really bad. I think they've got talent, but they have talent that doesn't exactly fit together, and it's going to take some time. And if you're Houston, the Thunder picks, the picks that you traded to the Thunder kick in after this next draft, and so this is your last shot to keep your pick and not have to sweat it out. Because their picks are protected too. So to me, this is a year where you're like, all right, everybody, just go out there and try whatever you'd like. And let's be bad. I think they're probably going to be the worst team in the league again, which is okay for them. But they do have a lot more talent. And if you can add like the number one or number two pick to that team, then like you start to really cook. And you can see Houston being a good team in the next like 3 or 4 years, like one of the better teams in the West.
Yeah, Andrew, what's your read on like how bad? I mean, we know the Thunder are not actively trying to go out and make the playoffs. What's your read on how bad they, because like the last years, they wanted to be the absolute worst. Like, are they just going to, you know, shut down Shai Gilgeous-Alexander again at the end of a season? Like, are they going to do that again? Or are they actually going to just be like normal bad and be satisfied with that?
I think it's possible that players get shut down again at the end of the season. I think the Thunder would like to have one more pick, and I also think the Thunder are going to operate this way until they have a new collective bargaining agreement in place. That's, I think, if you're a Thunder fan or if you're somebody that's watching, like, what are the Thunder doing? When is this going to stop? I think looking at the 2023 CBA is like a really good sign to when they want to start pushing to be good, because the rules changed a lot on the Thunder as they were building their team. Like Kevin Durant's contract changed overnight. without them even knowing it. You had the 2016 cap spike, and like there were just a lot of things.
The legendary 2016 cap spike, which is still being referenced in local Oklahoma City bars.
We have a segment on the Down to Dunk podcast where it's like, all right, time to talk about the 2016 cap spike. No, I think they want to know what the rules are. So I would be surprised if they're not at least like maybe fifth or sixth in the lottery. I think at some point you can't be the worst team in the league. You know, they've picked twice. They picked sixth and they picked second. And they already had Shea and they had Lou Dort. They just re-signed him. They have enough like good players to where I don't think you can be the worst team in the league. However, I don't think that they're going to try to make the play-in. I think they're going to be probably somewhere in between like fourth and eighth, just depending on how good Chet is, honestly. Like, how much does Chet help them this year? Like, defensively, they haven't had a guy like him in a long time.
And also, part of getting good for the future, like being good in the years you want to be good in a few years, is getting a ton of minutes together. Mm-hmm. So that's where... You know, I think this is the type of season, now that it feels like the Thunder aren't just accumulating draft picks, but now they actually have the physical humans that they want,
yep.
To be their core in the future. You just don't shut guys down when you don't have to, because like these guys need minutes. That's how they get better. I mean, you go look at the Durant Westbrook, early seasons, which is like, I guess like the template of what the Thunder want to recreate. Mm-hmm. Those guys were playing 80, 82 games. You know, they were losing, together, but it was like you need them to play together.
I will say it depends. It depends on where they're at with regards to shutting guys down. If they are like on the razor's edge of making the play-in, I think that they pull guys. If they are like firmly like the fifth worst team in the league, I think that you just let them play it out.
The Sacramento Kings are just shaking their head. You're on the verge of the play-in, and you don't go after it. Are you kidding me?
That would be my guess as to what they would do, though. Because I do think they want to be in the lottery again. I think that they want to add another high-level piece to this team, because if you're a small market team, you can't just be gifted good players to your team.
Let me ask you, and we bring Andrew on, and I'm love that we've wrapped ourselves deep into a Thunder conversation here, though. But I just, that does sound great in theory. That sounds like the correct decision. But I just wonder from the human component, from the fan base component that you know very well, Andrew, if you are sitting there, like if they were on the edge of the play-in in the last month and a half, there'd be some energy in that building. There'd be some energy around that core. That, Chet and Josh Giddey aren't going to go, you're right, Sam, the ninth pick would be great. We'd be like, dude, let's try to make the play-in and get a swing at the, Pelicans in a play-in game or something like that. And that's where it becomes a little bit dangerous, I think.
So the thing about it that does make me wonder is that Chet and Josh Giddey really wanted to play in Summer League, and they specifically wanted to play together. I didn't think that Josh was going to play in Vegas. I thought, because they played in the Utah Summer League and in Vegas, I didn't think Josh was going to play. And he wanted to play. Like, he showed up in Vegas saying like that he wanted to play in these games. And he played in three games, which was kind of shocking to a lot of people. So there may be an element of, I don't think that they're going to like sit these guys down and be like, you have to sit. I think it's more of like a conversation that they have with these guys and explaining to them. And they, at the end of the day, it may be that Josh and Chet and those guys want to play. And my guess is that they won't be good enough to get to the play-in. Like, I don't think that there's actually going to have to be a conversation like this. I don't think they'll be that good.
West is stacked.
The West is too good. And so I think there is hope that maybe these guys can play a full season and they're still the fifth worst team in the league, and then they can build on that for next year.
That's a great slogan for the season. Fred, you're a local Thunder fan, and that's what, like, we're going to play everybody and we're still not going to be good enough. Come on out.
They are the youngest.
I like your comment from before as a slogan. At least they have physical humans.
They are the youngest team in the league. Their average age is 22.8 right now, and they still have Derek Favors, who will likely be waived. So,
only in sports, by the way, do we say age with a decimal and not the number of months. Like, we don't say 22 in 10 months. We say 22. How old are you? 22.8.
This is just the number I've been given by whatever website I used. So,
yeah. We have not mentioned the San Antonio Spurs, by the way, as a team that could die below you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a team that has shown the motivation to lose and is putting itself in the position, traded DeJounte Murray, extended Keldon Johnson. So we'll see. I have a feeling that Jakob Poeltl is gettable. They love Poeltl there, but he's on.
Poeltl here.
I love Poeltl everywhere.
Yeah,
he's on an expiring deal. He's only $9 million.
How many unprotected first round picks would you give up for Poeltl?
How many do I have? Because that's the answer.
Yeah. If you're running the Knicks, do you take Poeltl or Mitchell?
No, you know what I'm doing? If I'm Toronto and Kevin Durant falls through, I'm calling about Poeltl and seeing if I can bring him back. Because that's actually perfect. They really want a rim protecting center. And they could make that work. He would fit in, I think.
Would Scottie Barnes be on the table for Poeltl? Would you
on the table? He'd be in San Antonio immediately, along with Siakam and OG.
So, let's go back to the Donovan Mitchell conversation. Who is being leveraged against the Knicks is probably the best way to put it.
Sure, Miami. But I don't think Miami's package is as good as theirs. You know, Shams has talked about Washington as a team there, but Washington's 2023 pick is actually in New York, and I'm sure would be one of the picks going to Utah if the Knicks figured out that deal. So, you know, Washington, that 2023 pick is protected all the way to 2026, which means that the soonest first-round pick the Wizards can trade is their 2028 first. So they would kind of need to hit up the Wizards and hit up the Knicks and give them something to unprotect that 23 pick so they could trade like 25, 27, 29, I guess. I don't know what else. I mean, a Wizards offer I don't think is as attractive as the Knicks. Like, Utah wants those picks. Like, Rui Hachimura is extension eligible. Denny Avdia is 2 years in.
Yeah.
Andrew's making a face right now. Like, Daniel Gafford's extension kicks in next year, and that's 3 for $40. Yeah. Like, he's going to be getting paid market value. Like, I don't know what that like Wizards deal would look like in order to beat the Knicks if the Knicks are willing to give a nice offer. You know, Shams has talked about Charlotte. But again, I don't know if Charlotte can beat that offer. You know, I'm sure PJ Washington would be in a deal like that. And then you throw in some picks. But again, Washington is going to get expensive next year. So that's something as well. And so I don't know. I don't know if there is an offer that's like, okay, that's great. I think if you're Utah and you're hoping another team jumps in and you really want to leverage another team's offer against the Knicks offer to get them to bite, or maybe even find a better one than what the Knicks can have, I think you might be best off waiting out the Kevin Durant situation and then hoping one of those Durant teams, whether because they don't end up with Durant or because Brooklyn just says, screw it, we're keeping him, you use one of those Durant teams. So, like, I have not specifically at all heard, to be clear, that Toronto wants Donovan Mitchell. I have no idea of Toronto's interest level, but just like spitballing a team. Like, Toronto could offer picks and OG Anunoby. Toronto could offer, you know, like a pick laden package, and maybe you throw in like Precious Achiuwa or something like that. Like, Toronto can make a really good offer. And that OG Anunoby contract is super team friendly, and he's still there for, I think, 3 more years. So, like, that's something, 18 a year, something like that. So, like, that's an offer where you're like, wow, you can get OG. If you want, you can keep OG because he's young and he's really freaking good, and everybody needs a player of that type, and he is about as good as you're going to get of that, just like staunch on the wing, hits his threes, good offensive player, awesome defensively, versatile, like he fits everywhere. So if you want to flip him, then you could probably get a ton back for him. Like Toronto, I probably could have traded him to Portland for number 7, right? And everyone was just like, why in the world would you do that? Mm-hmm. So like you can get stuff for OG if you really just want to go crazy on picks. So like, maybe their best leverage play is just waiting out KD and just capitalizing on a team misses out on KD that might want Mitchell.
Gonna have to keep waiting on that one. I'm not sure that one gets done even before Mitchell. or ever gets
done. Yeah, you might be right. It might never get done.
Yeah, yeah. What about Orlando? I've heard several people mention Orlando as a team. Do they have any interest of adding a player like Mitchell to this young core? I mean, that to me is an interesting one because they have tons of young players. They have tons of picks. Like they could make like the most attractive trade package like pretty easily, I think.
That probably depends on how much they're attempting to speed up the timeline, right? Is their ownership group going, hey, you know, we want to get to the 7th A seed. And, you know, historically they have been over the last decade or so like a team that like does kind of like to try to get the A seed, you know, 7 seed. So
definitely.
I think there's less patience there. So maybe, you know, that would be a fun little pairing, him and, you know, Paulo. You trade Suggs and a bunch of picks, a bunch of Magic picks. You know, when we mentioned part of why the reason why the Heat package is not appealing is because you're getting Heat draft picks, which are not typically, you know, they're going to be in the 20s. Whereas if you're getting a bunch of Orlando Magic picks or even Knicks picks, you're like, yeah, oh yeah, give me all those Magic unprotected picks. So maybe I probably wouldn't advise it if I was Orlando, and they at least as of right now don't seem like they're obsessed with like competing right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Magic also have Chicago's 2023, which is like pretty lightly protected. And that's from the Vucevic trade. And then they also have Denver's 2025. So they could include that. Can I say a sleeper team that I haven't heard any actual interest in? They're not a sleeper team, but just like a team that I think, like if I were them, I would strongly consider going after Mitchell.
Mm-hmm.
What about Cleveland? Like you have Garland and Mobley who are both awesome. If you're Cleveland and you can find a way to do something while holding on to, obviously, you're not trading Garland. He just extended. Obviously, you're not trading Mobley. He's Evan Mobley. And you have so many years of team control on him. And if you can find a way to keep Jared Allen in that, which you might be able to, because why would Utah, given we know what Utah wants, they want guys who have team control for a long time and they want picks. Like, that's what they want. I don't know why Utah would, like, go out of their way for Jared Allen in a situation like that. Like, Mitchell would be such a good fit there. You could have like Mitchell is kind of an offensive hub, but he still need like he's not Luka. Like he needs a point guard next to him to be able to run a secondary pick and roll, to be able to, you know, go off of weak side actions, like that kind of stuff, which is why I actually think he and Jalen Brunson, if he were to come to New York, would be such a good offensive fit together, even though the defense would be questionable. And you talk about like, yeah, like Garland is not a stopper on the perimeter at all. Mitchell is not a stopper on the perimeter at all, and was one of the problems for the Jazz, you know, the last few years in the playoffs, just with all those holes they had on the perimeter with guarding guys and all the driving lanes they gave up. But like, you have Evan Mobley and Jared Allen on the back line. Yeah. Like that's the best rim protection back line in the NBA, like of both guys. Like, yeah, Rudy Gobert is the best rim protector. Well, Jakob Poeltl is the best rim protector. But those... If you talk about your two guys, your four and your five, the best combined rim protection, it is easily in Cleveland. They were fifth in points per possession last year, even though they didn't have like great perimeter defenders. They were playing Lauri Markkanen at the three, which could have been a disaster. We all went into last year being like, that's going to be a disaster. And it wasn't only not a disaster. Those lineups were like really good defensively because Mobley and Allen are so good defensively and such good rim protectors. Like, you can get away with that defensively, I think. And offensively, that's a freaking lineup right there with Garland, who is all-star caliber. Mitchell is all-star caliber. Mobley is going to be all-star caliber real soon, maybe next year. You know, Allen's already an all-star. Like, that is a team right there. Like, you might have to trade LeVert. You might have to trade everything else, and you're going to have to give up picks. But, like, I know it's in 3 years he's probably gone if you do that in your Cleveland, but... I'm into that.
I wouldn't chase it. It's part of the reason I still don't like the Timberwolves trade because, you know, Anthony Edwards is still, what, 21? And they just traded away all of their future picks. And it's like, it sounds good now. The Timberwolves are better next season because of the Gobert trade. But I'm like, do we think that was like smart building for the next decade?
No.
So
that was too much.
I would make the same, you know, because for Cleveland to get into the Donovan Mitchell sweepstakes, we know what they'd have to give up, their entire draft pick future.
Yeah.
And I just, you're not there yet in your growth pattern. You know what I mean? Like, they would be fun to watch next season. I just, if you were smartly building it, I just think it's too rushed.
Yeah. I totally agree with that. They do have the Kevin Love expiring, which is kind of interesting because he's almost $30 million and expiring. You could swap Mitchell for Kevin Love and picks, and you don't have to give up. If you give up enough picks, you don't have to give up players. And also a problem with Cleveland is, like, what young players would they want? Like, I don't think, like, Isaac Okoro is getting that done. Abaji is not exactly a guy that you're bringing in to, like, build around or, like, have a – I mean, he's already 22. Like, he's already the same age as Darius Garland. He's a year older than Evan Mobley. So I just I think it's an interesting idea. I just don't think they have – the goods to get it done. They do. If I'm the Jazz, like, I'm very interested in getting, like, a big expiring contract like Kevin Love's, but I also want a young player, you know, in a trade like that.
Look, everybody keeps saying what the Jazz want for Mitchell, and that's great, but someone's got to give it to him.
Yeah, true.
And okay, let's go through the suitors. You're not getting that from Miami. Because Hero is about to get expensive and he's going to get a max probably. And Miami can only trade a couple of picks. We just went through Washington. We just, like, Charlotte doesn't have that automatic, that guy is going to be really good guy who they're going to give up. I think the Knicks offer, like, pretty easily the best package. But we're operating, for the sake of this conversation, we're operating under the assumption that it's not the Knicks, right? That the Knicks don't want to give it up. So, yeah, Toronto, I'm with you. Toronto can offer something really good, but, like, who are the teams? Because a lot of the teams that can offer the really good stuff, like, I just don't see. Like, we can't say that Orlando should be going for it, but with Cleveland, it's too soon on the timeline, you know? Cleveland is way farther along on the timeline than Orlando is.
I agree, but I don't think Orlando should either.
Yeah, for sure. I don't think he's the kind of guy who Memphis would want because they have Desmond Bane, who is under team control for much longer and is really, really good. Mm-hmm. I don't think he makes sense with, like, New Orleans because they just traded for CJ McCollum, and I don't think that makes sense. And you look at the other teams that have, like, assets or young guys to do it, and they're just, like, you know, we mentioned the timeline. They're just not in the timeline. Oklahoma City's not doing that deal. Nope. Houston's not doing that deal. It's hard to figure out, for as good of a player as he is, it's hard to figure out a team that has both the motivation and all of the pieces to meet what the Jazz want. So that's why I'm like, the Jazz can keep saying what they want, and that's great. But, like, there's kind of one team that's going to come the closest to what they want. I think the Knicks are fully aware of that, which is why they're not offering close to what the Jazz want. I think they're just fully aware, like, okay, it's kind of like when a team is negotiating with a free agent and they say, okay, you want more than what we're offering? Just go find somebody who's going to pay you more and come back to us before you sign it. But if you can't find somebody who's going to give you more, then just take the money. And I think the Knicks probably are and probably should be offering under a similar sort of strategy.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training just in time for summer and warmer days. I know I'm looking outside right now. Sun's out, birds are chirping. It's time to start getting outside. I know that I like to get outside and play basketball with my kids. And honestly, I need to get into a fitness routine in order to keep up with these guys. And Peloton is there for me. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout, whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance. Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. Peloton's classes were made to challenge you. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you're already excelling in. Peloton's program and instruction push you to be your best. Their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run indoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Yeah, there's probably one more segment I kind of wanted to talk about this week, which is two high-profile Rich Paul clients are up for extensions. And that's LeBron and Draymond, probably his two most high-profile. Draymond is August 3rd, which is Wednesday. I believe LeBron is August 4th, which is Thursday. Correct me if I'm wrong.
That's right.
You know, they're two different situations. I think LeBron holds a lot of the leverage in the Lakers situation. It's almost like a, you know, name your amount of years, name your price, you can have it. Or you can, you know, the big news would be if he just says no, right? No, I want to play this out. And then he holds a lot of cards over the next, year or so. From a leverage standpoint, which he has preferred over his organization. So that is, to me, a pretty big storyline across the league. And then the Draymond situation with the Warriors, this is such a big leverage point for Draymond. They just won their fourth title. He was good, you know, when he played this season, Defensive Player of the Year candidate. Obviously, he's just kind of the emotional engine. This is a time for him to try to get a big payday when maybe his stock is at its highest it's been over the last few years. He wants the max. And now I put max in air quotes because it's maximum allowable extension, which only starts at about $30.9 million. It's not like he's asking for the, you know, $45 million a year type extension, but still hefty money for Draymond at his age, 30 and with 8% raises. So, but the Warriors, you know, unlike the Lakers, are not just sitting there going, you know, name your contract, you can have it. They are, because of their tax bill, which me and Marcus wrote about, you know, in detail this past week, are just being a little bit more cautious with their future spending and what they're locking into. And starting Wednesday, when he becomes extension eligible, I think that kind of, you know, brings things to a head a little bit, because that would be the day that the Warriors would technically be kind of denying that type of an extension request from not only one of their most important legend players, but, you know, their loudest player, a guy who potentially, if he decides he's displeased with the situation, could decide to go public on any platform he likes, which includes TNT, which includes a podcast, whatever. So that, to me, that's just like, as we monitor a slow part of the offseason, those two things this week are interesting.
Yeah. What's your prediction for Draymond, Slater?
I don't think anything gets done. The Warriors are not motivated at all to max extend him now. And even if the price tag was brought, you know, to a more reasonable level, which, you know, Draymond can very much make you the argument, particularly in a Warriors environment, he deserves. They still can say, technically have two seasons left on his deal. The last one is a player option, but as of now, two seasons left at good money. They've never extended with two seasons left. They only extended Steph when he had 1 year left. And they, because of this rising tax bill, because Jordan Poole is, you know, extension eligible right now, because Wiggins only has 1 year left, they're just not trying to lock into long-term money. And they can be, you know, that front office, you know, can have a backbone in situations like this. And the ownership group clearly has shown that they're thinking about the future as much as the present. Even while winning titles in the present, they're protecting draft picks. They're taking lottery picks. You know, they're not trading away everything to maximize the now. I think that they're willing to play a little hardball, negotiation wise. And that could get interesting, because there are, you know, ways for people to leverage themselves in contract negotiations if they're willing to speak up about it.
Slater, I have a question. What's the Warriors' impression? Like, Draymond's 32 now. What's the Warriors' impression of how he's going to age? Like, what's their evaluation of that? Because we're getting to the point of, like, where some guys start to fall off, and so much of his success is based on just, you know, sheer intelligence. But, like, what is the impression of physically how he's going to age and how they think he's going to be into his mid-30s?
Yeah, I mean, look, this past season is a good argument both for and against it, which is, like, when he was healthy, he was, like, through whatever, it was January, like, 9th or when he went out with a very odd injury. But to that point, he was, like, considered, like, runaway defensive player of the year. He could sit there and go, look, I'm still, when healthy, the best defensive player in basketball. And all the stuff he does behind the scenes, you know, and he could argue he's being told to mentor his replacements right now, which is always a difficult scenario. So I think that, but, you know, again, the other argument, he did go down with it with a, you know, it was a nerve injury from his back that was tied to his calf, like kind of a scary sounding injury. So, you know, he's a 6'6", 6'7", really 6'6", 6'5", like big, who bashes his body around, which, you know, that you wouldn't think would age that well. But, I mean, I don't know. They just won the title. To me, that's part of the reason why I think there's such a motivation from him to try to get something done, is because, like, when will he have as much leverage as he has now, which is, like, coming off a title, you know, you have the most high-profile player in the organization who wants you around. Well, you know, and I'm talking about Steph Curry, you know, through his contract at least, which lasted another three seasons. Like, there's no better time than now to try to settle your future if you're Draymond. But as you said, Fred, if the Warriors, who have him under contract for at least one more season before he hits a player option, I think they believe they can kind of take a step back, and they don't, you know, there's no telling how exactly he'll age, but they could get another year of data before they technically have to make a, you know, longer term decision. And I think that's where maybe the impasse is.
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense. What about LeBron? He's going to be 38 in December, which is just wild. And the Lakers have been in this situation before with Kobe Bryant, where he's on the decline and then he kind of hits a wall, and the team really can't really rebuild with Kobe, and you can't really rebuild with LeBron. Is this a situation that they're comfortable riding out? Like, I really don't have a feel for it. I don't know what you guys think.
Outside looking in, it just kind of feels like, you know, a little bit opposite of what we were just talking about with Draymond and the Warriors. Like, LeBron just dictates terms.
Yeah.
Right? He just tells them what to do. I don't think there's any feeling within the Lakers like, well, you know, let's hold off. How's he going to age? This or that. It's more like they're so all in on LeBron. Now, you know, I say that, and they have at least shown a little bit of a pivot the last however long with, like, they're really trying to hold on to these 2027, 29 picks, right? They're just not going to trade him for anything. And they're dealing with that situation. But I generally think he's probably going to get whatever contract he wants, which could include no extension because he wants to, like, you know, kind of keep his thumb on the scale there. And that is a way he can probably dictate, like, some of the personnel moves over the next year easier than if he locks in to maximum allowable. And then, of course, there's, like, the whole Bronny James, like, off in the distance, Ken Griffey Jr., Ken Griffey Sr., like, situation looming out there.
I wonder how much LeBron looks at Kevin Durant's situation. And I, like, I wonder if he takes anything away from that, because KD signs an extension for 4 years. Doesn't even get a player option. LeBron wouldn't do that. LeBron gets everything he wants.
Yeah.
He wants the player option, he gets the player option. I've mentioned this on this podcast 12 times. I still cannot believe that Kevin Durant didn't get a player option on that extension. It just blows my mind. He's Kevin Durant. Yeah, he should be, okay, you give me whatever I want. And the Nets should be like, great, of course we do.
Yeah.
But I wonder if he looks at the KD situation where, you know, KD was in a situation where he could have had all the leverage all the time. Security is not that important for a guy like that. I mean, look, KD literally tore his Achilles and was going to miss an entire season from an Achilles tear in his 30s and still got a 4-year max. Mm-hmm. Like, when we talk about him, Giannis, LeBron, like, I don't know if security is, maybe when LeBron's 38, maybe he looks at it differently, but I don't know if security is on the forefront of those guys' minds the same way it is for like the basically every other player in the league, because they're going to get a max basically no matter what happens in the upcoming season. I wonder if LeBron looks at that, and he's a guy who signed 1-year contracts repeatedly throughout his career. Not all the time. He didn't do it with the Lakers, but you know, in Cleveland, for example, he's signing 1-year contracts. Like I wonder how much all of these things come into his thought process when he comes to this. I do have a thought exercise. If you're the Lakers and August 4th, you go to LeBron, say, what do you want in an extension? LeBron says, I want an extension. I'm good. How do you react if you're the Lakers? I don't mean like emotionally, how do you react? Like, what is your actual, emotionally, you just start crying and you just go in the bathroom and you come out a few hours later. Actual like response wise, like Andrew, what do you do? You just lost 49 games.
Yeah, I think you have to let it play out. I think so much of this is about how healthy Anthony Davis can get. And like, what does Anthony Davis look like moving forward? Because if he's not able to be the player that you traded for at any point moving forward, then you're probably heading toward some kind of rebuild or waiting for the next star or whatever you do when you're the Lakers. So to me, it's hard to do anything but say, okay, let's see how good we can be. Because if they're good this year, which is not impossible, then LeBron's going to sign the extension or is going to extend at some point with you or sign a new deal. But if you're still like, I don't know, like you're battling for the play-in and you're in April, I don't know that you want to extend the life of this team. So to me, it's not the worst situation to be in if you're the Lakers, because you may have a few bad years here or there if you're the Lakers, but eventually you're going to bounce back because people want to play in LA, and that's the team they want to play for. So to me, it's not the worst situation to try to wait this out and see what you've got. Obviously, you have the Westbrook situation kind of looming over you. Can you trade him? What do you do if you can't? Like, that's a whole other conversation. But just like, is Anthony Davis a top 12 player in the league anymore? And can he get there? Because if he can, like, you're going to be fine. Just having LeBron and AD playing well, like, you're going to be fine. So I kind of want to know if that's even a possibility first, even.
The answer Fred wanted was you call the Cleveland Cavaliers and go, Kevin Love and Evan Mobley, LeBron can come home again.
I think that's what the Lakers are hoping.
No, they just traded for Donovan Mitchell, so.
There you go. Yeah. Well, you know, he needs a pick and roll partner. Yeah. No, I mean, you just keep him. I mean, like Andrew said, ride it out. Now, I think that in some way, it's LeBron would maybe think if I do that, then they're more likely to use the 2027, 2029 first round picks, because that does feel like what, like the arguments about, like, you know, sure, do you use your last available assets to help me right now? So the argument would be, well, maybe then you turn and go Westbrook and these picks for Buddy Hield and Miles Turner. But maybe the choice would then be, hey, if you're not extending, we're protecting those picks. Yeah. Because you're really, you know, making our future, you know, it's even more in question. So to me, that's where the pivot point of August 4th comes in. It's like those picks.
Yeah. Yeah. If you trade those picks and Anthony Davis is like the 31st best player in the league and LeBron turns 38 in December, like you're in a bad spot. You're in a really bad spot. But if AD, again, to me, it's so much of this is about Anthony Davis and his health and what his career looks like from here. Because like, he's not old. Like he should be able to have some good years, but he's had so many injuries that you worry about what your future is with him.
How about that video this summer where, I don't know, what was it on, like an upcoming documentary or something? But he's like, man, I haven't touched a basketball in months.
I know. Yeah, that's got to make you feel
Kevin Garnett lost his mind over
that.
Yeah,
he did.
He lost his mind. I mean, there is another person who we haven't discussed.
By the way, before we discuss it, that reminds me of when I go to the gym and like shoot a basketball now. Like, oh man, it's been a while. Like, let me get a shot up here. Wow. Ooh, man, forgot about these muscles.
I mean, Andrew, you say it's about AD. I actually think it's overplayed AD's quality of play last year. Like, when he played, he was still a really good player. Like, he was not hitting his threes at all. He shot like 17% from three. But he was still a really good player when he played. I think how the hell they're going to figure out, and I know you're kind of beating a similar drum when you say this, but like LeBron, Westbrook, and AD, when those three were on the floor together, the Lakers were -3 per 100 possessions. Like their success was their anticipated success was built upon the fact that, okay, you know what? When those guys are off the floor, we're obviously not going to be good. But when those guys are on the floor, we're just going to maul teams. And you want, for that to happen, like those guys have to be like +10 per 100, +12 per 100 when they're on the floor together. And they were -3. So when you figure, okay, when those guys are off the floor, we're not going to be good. But when they're on the floor, you're actively bad. That's when you lose 49 games. I don't know how they're going to figure that out. I don't know where Russ is going to be. But like that is a massive change that has to be adjusted, that has to be stripped away. Like, I don't know what you do, but like that is a problem that is just as much of a problem today as it was last year.
All right, we should get out of here on this marathon off-season podcast. Should be, yeah, could be an eventful week. Could also, zero things could happen this week also. So, Andrew, thank you for filling in for Sam Amick, who I believe next time we do a tampering, which I don't even know when it'll be, but I believe Sam Amick will be back.
Yeah,
so
couple weeks. Yeah, I filled in the Kings talk with Thunder talk is the big difference here.
I enjoyed us devolving into a Thunder conversation for about 10 minutes. There will be more Thunder talk, I would assume, in the years ahead.
We'll see. Hopefully so.
All right. We will talk to y'all soon.